We have a major deficit this year. Can you tell us what's happening with the budget this year in California?
There's a lot of uncertainty, both in the size of the deficit and where we are moving forward. Depending on who you ask, in 2024, we dealt somewhere with between a $50 to a $73 billion deficit. More than 200 programs will be impacted in one way or another. Low-income Californians and communities of color are essentially going to be disproportionately impacted. This is because these communities really rely on these programs, be it in food, housing, education. There's about a 90% cut for environmental protection, and this is by far the largest reduction of any year-to-year analysis. About $1 billion is going to be cut from the Department of Corrections.
My guest today is Travis Gilmore, California reporter for the Epoch Times. Today, he'll tell us the details of California's budget deficit and the spending cuts that the state is making to address it, and whether there's going to be tax increases as well.
The legislature is essentially looking to balance these reductions by putting forth bond measures. What we're essentially doing is borrowing from the future with these changes, which will put further pressure on later budget years, later fiscal years. We're banking on the fact that revenues would ideally increase going into future years, and then needing that money to recover some of these promises or these loans that we're making today.
Is there any certainty about the future of the revenues going up?
So because we're so dependent on capital gains taxes, if those revenues don't materialize, we could be in a situation where this deficit extends for several years.
Now, with the stock market being at all times high, it's pretty odd that we have this deficit, isn't it?
It is really odd.
I'm Siamak Khorami. Welcome to California Insider. Travis, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Thank you, Siamak. It's a pleasure to be here.
Travis, you've been working on the budget, and you've been working with the legislative body. You've been reporting on the budget, what's happening with the governor's office. We have a major deficit this year. Can you tell us what's happening with the budget this year in California?
Yes, there's a lot going on with the budget this year, and there's a lot of uncertainty, both in the size of the deficit and where we are moving forward. What we do know is that we have a significant deficit this year, which the budget seeks to overcome with two different action plans, one that was passed earlier this year and then the main budget that was just signed by the governor in July.
Can you tell us what these action plans are?
Yes. So with the budget being so large this year in terms of its deficit, the legislature really sought to get out in front of the issue. And they passed a $17.3 billion early action plan in what's so-called a junior budget bill, which brought about some cuts, reductions, deferrals, and delays. And then in what was part of the normal budget process, the legislature passed later this year its full budget, which was signed by the governor with about 19 different trailer bills, which helped define some of these different cuts, some of the different actions that would take place within the document. And all of these were signed by July 2nd by Governor Newsom.
For average Californians, when we're hearing about these deficits, how would it impact us?
There's still a lot of uncertainty in how exactly this will impact all Californians. But what we do know is that about 200 different programs, or even more than 200 programs, will be impacted in one way or another. And then in addition to this, the governor has requested and ultimately signed into the budget about an 8% reduction across all government agencies. And again, uncertainty lies here as well. We have the director of finance will ultimately be responsible for helping these agencies identify where budgets can be cut. We are being told is that this will not entail job losses. The governor and the separate agencies will be looking across all departments to see what can we do to reduce expenditures. And this would save about $3 billion, which is a drop in the bucket when we look at the actual deficit. LAO, the Legislative Analyst's Office, tells us what was about a $73 billion deficit. The governor originally estimated somewhere between a $38 and a $53 billion deficit. If we look at the early action plan and the budget combined, there was about $64 billion with a combination of spending cuts, reductions, deferrals, delays, and pauses, some revenue, which essentially means increased taxes, a little bit of borrowing, and then the governor is also tapping into the state's reserves. And one thing that was different this year is that we know that the budget deficit is going to extend beyond the current fiscal year. So the legislature and the governor have taken a path where with the budget that was just signed, they're actually looking to solve the budget deficit as it extends over the next two fiscal years. So over these two fiscal years, we're tapping into about $12.2 billion in reserves, which is slightly more than half of the state's current nest egg.
So when you are saying $64 billion essentially is getting cut, and you mentioned there's 200 programs, over 200 programs that are getting impacted, what does that impact mean? Like, is there any numbers of how much cut? Is it going to get cut significantly?
Yes, we do know that some of these cuts, we do know the exact amounts. And there was a lot of debate between the governor and the legislature. A lot of negotiations took place. So the governor proposed significant cuts to certain programs, the legislature countered, and they've come up to an agreement where when we look at this, some of the significant ones include about $1 billion that's going to be cut from the Department of Corrections. And this is significantly higher than what the governor had initially proposed. He had proposed about $82 million annually in reductions. The legislature took a path where they really want to see what they call efficiencies and more cost reductions across CDCR. Now, this is not closing any prisons, where the legislative analyst's office had suggested the state could save billions of dollars by closing additional prisons. What the governor is looking to do is essentially close down some yards in some prisons. So we will see less beds, less capacity in these facilities. And again, similarly to the 8% budget cut across state departments, the Department of Corrections also needs to identify how to save what's essentially a little bit more than $400 million annually in reductions. But they'll be working with the Department of Finance to identify how they can safely make these reductions. We're getting some pushback. You have the labor unions that are involved with some of these, the employees, the jailers, and the different corrections officers. They don't really want to see hours cut. So there's going to be a lot of negotiations as we move into the fall and how to actually realize these cuts. But we are seeing also, the governor basically mentioned in his press conferences that these are cuts that not necessarily he or anyone in the legislature wants to make, but that the state is in a fiscal dilemma. And so he called it a math problem, that it basically forced him to make cuts to programs that he did not want to cut. So this is essentially across the board. When you look at climate, education, housing, all cuts will be, or all of these programs will be impacted by some level of cuts, some from hundreds of millions of dollars, others more modest, $40 to $70 million cuts. There was a really interesting webinar the California Endowment held on July 10th, and Joe Stephenshaw, the director of finance, he led off the webinar. And what this discussion was about was how low-income Californians and communities of color are essentially going to be disproportionately impacted. And some of this is because these communities really rely on these programs, these 200-some programs that offer financial assistance, different services, and opportunities, be it in food, housing, education. There's different elements where typically the state would be allocating funds to these different programs, where now there's just going to have to be a cutback in order to make ends meet.
And these programs, so in terms of the people that are impacted, so you think these communities will get impacted most because these programs are the ones that are on the line, right?
Yes, they're the programs that are on the line to be cut. These are also the individuals in California in most need of these programs. There's other programs that, while some would say are needed for the state, these are the programs like CalWORKs. And CalWORKs was kept, the legislature really held the line for CalWORKs. They really attempted to mitigate some of the cuts that the governor had proposed. He had proposed eliminating multiple programs within this financial aid program. And the legislature pushed back on that and said that we can't eliminate these. Instead, we'll just make cuts to them. Now, where some of these programs are saying this could be additionally hard this year is because we're already in an inflationary environment where everything, all these services that they offer cost more, where the people that are receiving this assistance need more because the groceries that they're buying are more expensive or the transportation that they need costs them more. So they're more in need of the assistance, yet there's less money to go around this year.
We're covering California issues, as you know. If you want us to cover the stories that are impacting your day-to-day life in California, reach out to me at siamak@californiainsider.com. Travis, a big part of our state budget is education. And we have actually voted for it as Californians. We have voted for this proposition, Prop 98, to allocate about 40% of our budget to education. How's the impact of this on the budget?
It's a really complex issue. When you ask Governor Newsom, he'll tell you that Prop 98 is so complex, you need a team of economists to figure this out. But what we're seeing is a suspension of the minimum formula. So there's a certain amount of the budget that's supposed to be allocated to education. Yet at this time, because of the financial troubles, what the governor is looking to do and what the legislature has approved is essentially to suspend the formula currently. Now, what Joe Stephenshaw mentioned just this month was that what we're essentially doing is borrowing from the future with these changes. So while we suspend the amount of money that's being put in now, it's a really complicated subject, and it's the legislature calls this a maintenance factor. But what it basically means is that the money that's not put into the education now will need to be put in later, which will put further pressure on later budget years, later fiscal years. So the education in general, if you look at the overall budget, it does look like there is a slight increase in funding for education, especially for K through 12. The pre-kindergarten education funding was really supported well. There's no cuts in terms of broad-based reductions to early education. When we look at higher education, there is about a $200 million reduction as would be allocated to the University of California and Cal State. And the Cal State Chancellor came out earlier this month and said that this will have significant impacts on the CSU system. They're estimating about a $200 million gap in spending and revenues. And while we are seeing slight increases in funding for the future fiscal years for these universities, there is concern that they will not be able to meet ends meet unless they figure out some way to balance their expenses as well.
You mentioned climate, and what was cut from there?
Yes, so it's about $20 billion cut from what would have been a $54 billion allocation. There were significant cuts to climate, and especially when you compare the 23-24 allocations to the 24-25, there's about a 90% cut for environmental protection, and this is by far the largest reduction of any year-to-year analysis. There's additional cuts to several climate-related programs, and the legislature is essentially looking to balance these reductions by putting forth bond measures. So there's about a $10 billion bond measure that Californians will get to vote on in November. And this is a similar action to what occurred with education, where the state would like to be providing more money towards education and climate. There's just not the funds in the bank right now. And so what they're essentially asking Californians to do is foot the bill there. Now, when you look at the Public Policy Institute of California surveys on this, it does look like there is support for these bond measures. It will remain to be seen until November. What critics say, though, is that by borrowing this $10 billion for each program, $10 billion for education, $10 billion for climate, the state could eventually pay back about $35 billion. Because of interest costs and financing costs, it will ultimately cost the state significantly more to cover this funding. But as the budget sits right now, legislators and the governor feel that this is the only way to provide this money is to ask Californians for it.
So when you mean they asking Californians for it, so where does this money come from?
Yes. So if the bond measures are approved in November by Californians, then the bonds need to be sold. And when we look at historical records, we still have some potential bonds that have not been all completely sold yet. There's multiple things that would have to happen here. We'd have to have the voters approve the bonds, and then we would have to have some investors decide that they want to purchase these bonds, assuming that they would be getting more back through interest payments and essentially using the state's needs as an investment mechanism. But all of this remains to be seen. We need two things to happen here. We need the voters to approve it, and we need people to put up the $10 billion for climate bonds, to put up the $10 billion for education bonds. And the exact amount that it would cost the state to repay it will all depend on what interest rate the states can secure when they do sell these bonds. When we talked to Senator Roger Nilo, the budget vice chair for the Senate, he essentially says the state can't afford this, that it costs us even more money down the road, and that it will just put further pressure on finances at that point.
And does the payback paying these loans back, does it come out of the budget eventually?
Yes, it will eventually come out of the budget.
But it just goes down the line, kind of further.
You know, it goes down the line. And that's one of the other issues with the Prop 98 funding as well. There's multiple mechanisms in this budget where Joe Stephenshaw, the director of finance, he even lays it out clearly that we're essentially taking out loans in the future, is what he said, that we're putting ourselves potentially in issues in terms of revenue in future years. We're banking on the fact that revenues would ideally increase going into future years and then needing that money to recover some of this, these promises or these loans that we're making today.
Now, is there any certainty about the future of the revenues going up? So the revenues were down significantly and now they've been climbing up, right? Is that?
Yes, and we're in a really interesting situation in terms of revenue and in terms of our budget deficit. So in 2021, the state experienced record high revenues, and a lot of this came from capital gains taxes. So the stock market increases coming out of the pandemic, a lot of investors in California did really, really well on those increases that pushed our revenue collections to record numbers. Now, unfortunately, lawmakers expected those revenues to persist, and so they forecast spending in line with these higher revenues. But what we've seen was exactly the opposite, that stock market volatility essentially led to reduced revenues in both 23 and in 22, which has put us in this budget deficit. Now, when I speak to economists, they tell me that one of the situations or one of the ironic scenes here that we're dealing with is that we're in a budget deficit due to stock market volatility and reduced capital gains taxes while stock markets are at an all-time high. And if there is a correction or a downturn in the market, this could really fare poorly for revenues for the state moving forward. Because we are a very high income state, we have a lot of people, this is something the governor highlights, that we have more millionaires and more billionaires than any other state, but they sit their money oftentimes in equity markets. And when those equity markets turn sour, they experience the losses and we don't receive those capital gains revenues. So because we're so dependent on capital gains taxes, when they don't materialize, it puts us in a really bad fiscal situation. And that's the situation we're looking at now. We're already looking at deficits. We're looking forward to future years, hoping that revenues increase. But if those revenues don't materialize, we could be in a situation where this deficit extends for several years. And the governor and director of finance are already very open about the fact that this budget situation we're in now is not a one-year thing, that we're already looking forward potentially to maybe not potentially higher deficits, but a persistent budget deficit. It's why they looked for a two-year window in this budget that they just passed, really trying to mitigate being in that same situation we're in now, where they're having to make broad cuts that they really don't want to make. They're looking to create a budget that is more sustainable moving forward so that we don't have these significant ups and downs that we've had in recent years. Now, when you talk to one side, they say this is a revenue issue. When you talk to the other side, they say this is a spending issue, that instead of banking on higher revenues, what we should really be doing is cutting back on our spending. We should really rein in spending, make it where we have a revenue spending balance, and that's the way to create actual sustainability.
Now, with the stock market being at all times high, it's pretty odd that we have this deficit, isn't it?
It is really odd. And some of this could be just in the nature of investments. Like maybe the California investors weren't able to capitalize on some of these all-time highs. It's also possible that as we go into the 25 year that we'll look at 24 and see that we did have really good capital gains increases. When we look at the monthly, the Department of Finance puts out monthly revenue estimates as they come in, and we're actually looking pretty good in 2024. We're not seeing huge losses. We're not seeing any massive surpluses, but we are in a situation where we're much more balanced moving forward in 2024 than we were in 2023. We dealt with a $30 billion deficit in 2023. Depending on who you ask, in 2024, we dealt somewhere with between a $50 to a $73 billion deficit. And the idea is that as we move into the 25, 26 fiscal years, that we could try to see some sort of balance. Now, where critics say that we have issues is that A lot of these cuts that were proposed for the 2024-2025 budget are in one-time cuts. The Legislative Analyst's Office has repeatedly warned that these cuts need to be ongoing, that they're taking the stance that spending needs to come down, that we need to have ongoing cuts in order to put ourselves in a situation where even if revenues don't meet expectations, that we're not having to make broad cuts.
You mentioned revenues. Some people say we don't have enough revenues. When it comes to revenues in government, usually it comes to taxes. So is there any tax increases from what you've observed?
Yes, there are definitely tax increases in the current budget plan. And the governor had expressed his desire to not raise taxes, and he followed through on that promise in terms of personal income taxes. No Californians that are not employers will be faced with direct tax increases. But there were changes in the budget. There was a net operating loss suspension. And this essentially is just when businesses have losses in one year, they can use those to reduce their taxes in a future year when they do have profits. And that has been suspended. And there were negotiations between the governor and the legislature about when and how these would start and take place. But they will start in 2024, and they'll move forward 2025 and 2026. So businesses cannot take this net operating loss suspension. So businesses will pay higher taxes over the next 3 years. As we saw also with Prop 98 and some of these other loans, these businesses will be able to take some of these tax, will be able to write off some of these in future years, which will also put further pressure on revenues at that point. Similarly, there's a limit on $5 million in tax credits. So even if a company normally in a normal budget environment would have been able to take significantly more than $5 million in tax credits, they're limited this year. There's a cap at $5 million. And so that, in combination with the net operating loss suspension, will result in businesses having to pay more taxes. What some economists tell me is that as you disincentivize business investment in California, you could further impact revenues. Some businesses could be looking at California as a good place to invest, but looking at this, well, I can't take net operating loss suspensions, whereas I can in other states. There's a limit to my tax credits of $5 million. This could cause some businesses to choose to start their business in another state. It could also potentially cause some businesses that are already operating in California to decide to leave. And this is a situation where when we look at budget deficits that are all based on revenues, when businesses leave California, they take all of this tax money that would have been paid to California, that would have been revenue, with them. In addition, they might take their employees, and even if they don't take the actual employees, all of that employee-related taxes that were coming in as revenue to California is lost as well. So there is one side that says that we could be disincentivizing business investment and causing businesses to leave. We asked Governor Newsom specifically how businesses leaving California were impacting the budget deficit at his initial budget press conference in January. And he rejected the notion and said that we are, because of our intellect and in our capacity in California to provide talent and intellectual talent that many other states can't, that we will always be a drawer and a net gain for businesses and activities. But it remains to be seen if these suspensions and tax, what we would call problems for some businesses, could potentially lead to fewer employers in California.
What about the legislature? You mentioned the governor didn't want to tax, they raised taxes. But what about, was there a desire inside the legislative body?
That's a good question. And there was a lot of talk about potentially there was. Budget discussions, though, they're crafted behind closed doors. So we don't see the negotiations as they take place. We see the final documents, and we'll see occasionally some back and forth about how to manage specific cuts or reductions, but we're not seeing those discussions in terms of revenue potential. And there was a lot of speculation from media, from certain lawmakers early this year, that there would be tax increases to solve this budget problem. But the governor really stuck to his word and said that he said repeatedly that our corporate tax rate and our personal income tax is already so high that the people and the businesses can't bear more. And that's one of the things that, instead of just raising a corporate tax rate, this net operating loss and tax credits, these are temporary. So it is something that won't always affect businesses. The Legislative Analyst's Office noted in their report, though, that this net operating loss has been used repeatedly, coming out of the 2008 financial crisis, again in the pandemic, that it's become so frequent that it's essentially a situation where businesses can't rely on it. They don't know 1 year to the next, will they be able to do their accounting in similar ways? And this uncertainty, what many business leaders will say, is not good, that they really need the ability to understand what exactly their expenses are, what they're going to be able to do in terms of accounting. They have fiduciary responsibilities to their stockholders and to their employees to maintain profitability so that everyone can maintain their jobs. And this uncertainty is really problematic in terms of incentivizing business investment.
So Travis, you mentioned that there's hundreds of programs, 200 plus programs were cut. And there's certain cuts in different areas. How did the decision making, who is making the decision, what's getting cut, and is there a process?
There is a collaborative process between the governor's office and the legislature. Now, not all lawmakers are included in these discussions. The budget vice chair of the Senate, Senator Nilo, he's told us that he really wished that he was included more in these discussions. One of the other things really interesting that came out of the California Endowments webinar was the programs that were going to be cut. They're requesting going into future budgets that they also be included in these discussions so that stakeholders can put forth their perspective and show how they may or may not be able or willing to adapt to some of these cuts and hope to influence that decision making. But it is a quasi-secretive discussion in terms of how these are crafted. Now, the governor is very clear that he didn't, on many of these, his hand was forced, that these were not cuts that he wanted to make, and that this is just simply a reaction to the lack of revenues. But it's not clear to anyone exactly how these are formulated and how they come about.
So you mentioned that in terms of the future, the next few upcoming years, there's already estimated that there's billions of dollars of deficit coming the next year and the year after.
Yes. And this comes from the governor's projections, the Department of Finance, and the Legislative Analyst's Office. Nobody knows exactly how much. We won't know until revenues come in. But there's definitely an expectation that we are looking at a multi-year deficit moving forward. And this comes on the heels of a $100 billion surplus only 2 years ago. And some of the uncertainty that created the deficit that we're in now came about because we had really heavy weather, rains impacting the state, and the federal government pushed back the due date for taxes. Typically, everyone's taxes were due in April. They pushed them back until November. And so some of what we're dealing with now would have actually been dealt with last year had we had better information. And because that we didn't understand, the state, the governor, the legislature, no one knew how bad the situation was until the end of the year last year. Now we're essentially trying to deal with multiple years deficit all piled into one. So this year taxes were due in April, so we will have a better idea as we move into the next fiscal year about how to manage this. But it's a little bit of a carryover effect as these have moved forward. And then it's also what we're looking at in terms of revenue, that they are expecting modest 5% growth in revenues, but nowhere near the projections or the actual collections that we had in 2021. And this is why the LAO says that we really need to make permanent spending cuts, because we've allocated this money back in 2021, or we promised this money, and we promised it going forward to these programs, but we don't have anywhere near the amount of money. And we asked the governor, how did we move from such a significant surplus to such significant deficits? And at his May revise, and he told us that it was the rain, that he called them rain bombs, that essentially no one could have foreseen this coming, that it changed our lack of understanding in terms of our fiscal situation, and that's what put us here. The LAO, we've talked, I know Gabriel Patek has been on the show, we've talked to him extensively, and he said that this is a combination of a lack of understanding and also forecasting, expecting higher revenues. So we promised spending that just didn't materialize, And that's also one of the solutions that we're seeing in this year's budget. A lot of it came with the early action plan. We've gone back 3 years into past budgets and pulled money back. So this was hundreds of millions of dollars that was promised to various programs, but they had not yet spent it. And so now we've pulled that money back to the general fund to help ourselves in this fiscal year.
In terms of touching the rainy funds, have we done that? And how much did we take out?
Yes. So the governor initially proposed using even more this year. So we're going to take about $12.2 billion. And the state has a combination of funds. So we have the safety net funds, we have the rainy day funds, we have some school funding. We're tapping into a lot of that, but we're tapping into it going over the next two fiscal years. So it's slightly more than $5 billion in the current fiscal year, about $7.1 billion in the next fiscal year that we're going to use. And that's using slightly more than half of our reserves. So we do have to be more cautious in terms of spending going into the next years. We're not going to have the large amount of reserves we have now that we could potentially tap into. But the legislature and the governor were very cognizant of the fact that they do need to leave a nest egg. And they've done just that. They've balanced using reserves with reductions, deferrals, and delays. And it's some of these deferrals and delays, while some programs aren't necessarily being cut, the deferral or the delay also impacts and could impact Californians as well, because while the money is not necessarily completely taken away, there's not access to it in the current fiscal year. And one interesting fact with the budget is that there was discussion back and forth about how to handle healthcare assistance given to illegal immigrants. And depending on who you ask, this is going to cost the state between about $3 and $6.5 billion annually. The governor had proposed carving out some of that for in-home housing services, and the legislature, in its final report, they rejected that. They put that money back in, and so the undocumented healthcare assistance remained untouched. However, there was another program that was seeking to provide food aid, which is essentially cash EBT cards for illegal immigrants. This was delayed until 2027. So there was supposed to be access for illegal immigrants into the food assistance program that, while not cut, is delayed until future years.
Travis, do you have any other thoughts for our audience?
Well, stay tuned. We're at the legislature every day. We're following what's happening. And if you pay attention to our coverage, if you see what we're doing on both our video and our text platforms, we are really committed to covering California, making sure that Californians are well aware of everything that's happening, both in terms of the budget, what's happening at the legislature, with the governor's office, and we're here to make sure that everyone understands.
Travis Gilmore, reporter at Epoch Times, it was great to have you on California Insider.
Likewise, Siamak. Thank you so much for having me.